This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Rock Chick Reborn, written by Kristen Ashley, performed by Nicole Small.
Chapter 1. Your attention. Chicken and waffles. Dude, are you crazy? No chick is gonna want you making her chicken and waffles. I'm making her chicken and waffles. Everyone likes chicken and waffles. Yeah, and your bitch probably likes them too. The thing is, she'll never want you to know she likes them or that she likes any food at all. At that, I stopped us all on a skid. If you call a woman a bitch one more time, Sniff, I'm gonna clock you back to the 17th century, I warned. Me and my boys were standing in the floral section of King Supers. This was because Sniff and I had been warned the day before that we had to skedaddle from the house for the night because Rome was bringing over one of his bitches. And I was an adult. I could think that and say it. To make her dinner. So we were shopping for said dinner and for everything else it took to raise two teenage boys. This last necessitating me being at the damn grocery store at least 3 times a week. Case in point, I'd seen Rome eat an entire pack of Oreos in one sitting, open a second, and hoover through a whole row. Not an ounce of fat on the boy, though. As an aside, why was the world so unfair? A woman did that, her ass would follow her into a room 3 weeks after she entered it. And by the by, I mentally asked about the world being unfair a lot. I never got an answer. Though I shouldn't ask, because I knew the answer. It was partly about people doing stupid shit their own damn selves, me included. It was also that the world was just unfair. Needless to say, raising 2 teenage boys meant most of the store would be in my navigator in about an hour. It should be noted that they weren't exactly my boys, in the sense I didn't birth either of them, and that was only obvious with one, the white one. I was their foster mother. They were still my boys. Sniff, as usual, acted like he hadn't heard my warning. He said, "Charlene, tell him. No girl is gonna want him to make chicken and waffles for dinner, because she'll want him to make chicken and waffles for dinner, and it'll be torture pretending she doesn't want to snarf down chicken and waffles at dinner." I studied Sniff. 18 and long, since having grown out of his skinny, acne-ridden early teens. Now the boy was 6 foot of lean muscle, not skin and bones, and although he had a couple of acne scars, which only made his face look interesting, the excellent insurance plan I was enrolled in at work and a good dermatologist had taken care of the rest. In other words, now he was hot. It made me throw up a little in my mouth to think that about my boy, but the evidence was standing right in front of me wearing jeans that every mother in the country would declare illegal, and a cream short-sleeved thermal that molded to various features of his developed chest, narrowing ribs, and flat stomach. The power that package had over teenage girl pussy, I blamed on the hot bunch. It was them that took the boys under their wing. This included physical training, but also the inescapable soaking up of general badassness. So it was them that had honed the bods my boys now had, including Rome's, who was a lot bulkier, taller, and a different brand of hot. Chocolate hot. Effective chocolate hot. As evidenced by his serial dating, leading to chicken and waffles. Sniff didn't serial date. He serial banged. Due to an uncomfortable conversation Hank and I had some time ago, one that put me in my bed with the vapors for 2 days, and one that made Hank look like he might expire from trying not to bust a gut laughing after I talked him into having the talk with the boys, Hank kept them in condoms. They could buy their own, of course. They not only got an allowance from me for keeping their rooms clean, taking out the trash, and looking after the house, they were paid interns for Nightingale investigations. They didn't do any of the dangerous stuff. They did stuff in the control room and stuff on the computers. Or at least they didn't tell me if they did the dangerous stuff. On that, I just had to trust Liam Nightingale and his band of merry badasses would do the right thing with my boys. I was all about don't ask, don't tell. With two teenage boys in my crib, who I loved beyond reason, but who were hot bunch in the making, this was my new life motto, and my only hold on sane. But Hank made sure they were supplied, so I didn't have to take up residence in Babies R Us, or factor child support into their allowances. Thus, Hank had taken me aside not 2 weeks ago to share that Sniff, particularly, might want to get a second job to keep him at the necessary level of prophylactics, and that I might want to buy stock in Trojan. It was a warning. I requested Hank engage in another conversation with both boys, roping in Rome just to make sure. Then I took to my bed with the vapors. If he wants to make his girl chicken and waffles, he's gonna make his girl chicken and waffles, I decreed. I did this, even though Sniff was right. No girl was going to show she loved chicken and waffles in front of a boy. It was ludicrous, at that age or any age. I had long since learned the only way to live in order not to do your own head in was to let it all hang out. It was also the way of the world. Until you learned. Although I tried to teach my boys other practical knowledge, the hot bunch would never be able to transfer on them, like the importance of keeping a house, laundering your clothes, and being able to cook, Rome was hopeless in the kitchen. The kid could grill a mean burger, but other than that, frying some chicken and manning a waffle maker were the only culinary skills he'd mastered. Sniff, on the other hand, was a savant in the kitchen. All he had to do was watch some show on Food Network, look up the recipe online, go out and get the stuff, and boom. There it was on a plate in front of his brother from another mother and me. He had the touch. Good kid, in a lot of ways. If he'd quit trying to make up for being scrawny and pimple-faced when he was younger by tagging every piece of ass who glanced his way and would not have glanced his way 2 years ago. It's gonna be a bust, Sniff muttered. It's gonna be awesome, Rome returned. It's gonna... I trailed off when something that felt like a finger traced lightly down the back of my neck. For some reason, maybe instinct after being around the hot bunch for so long, this made me turn my attention to the rose section. And there stood a man with an empty cart, not moving, his eyes locked on me. And oh, sweet Lord, he was beautiful. Tall as Rome, had to be, at least 6'2". Close-cropped hair, close-cropped beard that was thicker around his mouth, scanter but not sparse on his cheeks. Both were sprinkled very minimally with a little white. He had wide-set, big, deep brown eyes, and a beautiful brother's nose, thick and strong. Making that better, at the bridge there were a couple of creases. There were some creases in his forehead that were interesting as well, and with the white in his beard, they were the only things on his burly, wide-shouldered frame that told tale of his age. He was just perfect. Even the shape of his skull sitting on the column of his neck was divine. As I stared at him, his gaze unlocked on me to drop to my hands on the cart. Then it went to the boys, and a slash of white formed between his beautiful full lips, exposing strong white teeth. He gave us a group scan, then turned to the display of roses. "Is that brother seriously checking you out in front of us?" Rome asked, not happy about the possibility and not hiding it in his tone. I turned my attention to him to see him scowling at Idris Hadi at the roses. "No," I answered. "He fucking was," Sniff rumbled, and I looked to him to see him glowering at the beautiful black man, now examining a bouquet of beautiful orange roses. "If you say fuck in front of me one more time, or at all, I'm knocking you back to ancient Egypt," I promised. Sniff ignored me, still busy frowning at the hottie at the roses. "Right, there were groceries to buy. I was hungry, and I wasn't going to get to eat until they were bought, taken home, put away, and Sniff and I left Rome to hopefully make his girl chicken and waffles, then do nothing more than hold her hand while watching TV. So we needed to get shit done. You boys are going to Walgreens, I announced. Slowly, they both turned to me.
Say what? Rome asked.
You work my nerves in the grocery store. I got things I need from the drugstore, and we don't have a lot of time. I got a list, I stated, opening my Raisin artsy MMLV bag and yanking out my drugstore list, a pen, and my wallet. In order for them to get the right stuff, I scrawled some words on the list before I shoved it with some cash at Sniff. Go. Get that stuff, come back, and get me. I dug for my keys, got those, and handed them to Rome. Be good to my baby. You break it, I break you. Sniff stared down at the list, a beat, then looked at me.
They got all this stuff at King Soopers.
They do not have my nail varnish at King Soopers, I retorted. Sniff looked back to the list, then to me.
I am not buying nail polish called clothing optional.
I crossed my arms on my chest.
Tell me, boy, one day when you done notched so many marks on your bedpost, you got no bedpost anymore and you want yourself an Indy.
No reaction.
A Jet.
None there either.
Roxy?
Nope.
Jules.
Surprisingly, since they were both tight with Jules and I thought they both crushed on her, that didn't hit it either.
Stella?
Nothing.
Sadie.
His eyes flared. So, he went for the fairy princess bitches, if they were white. Though I'd noted my boy had a thing for the sisters. Then again, those were the fairy princess ones, too. I'd seen him with more Brandies and Gabrielles than I could shake a stick at.
Right. You want yourself a Sadie someday, boy. You're gonna be finding yourself buying a lot more than nail polish to make her happy. You think Hector blinks at nail polish?
Yes, he declared. So, they hadn't learned all they could learn from the hot bunch.
You'd be wrong, 'cause I might not have seen him buy nail polish, but I sure as shit saw him snatching up some OBs, and he did it like he was grabbing a six-pack. In other words, it made no never mind to Hector Chavez he was getting his woman her OBs.
Sniff looked at Rome.
What are OBs?
Rome started to look sick.
Tampons,
I educated. Sniff started to look sick. I could not talk about my boys having sex and the necessity of condoms. I could sure as shit talk about this.
You do know the menstrual cycle is a fact of life, and unless there's some sad reason that makes a woman not have them, all women do, I shared. It's entirely natural. And something you both are gonna have to deal with on a hopefully normal and healthy occasion. That is, when you settle down in a monogamous relationship with a woman you love more than your own life.
Both boys looked ready to hurl. I heard a chuckle, and it wasn't only my eyes that went in that direction as Rose Hottie wandered into the fruit and veg section with that big bouquet of orange roses, having been wrapped in pretty paper at the floral station, sitting in the child seat at the top of his cart. He had a woman. Again, why was the world so unfair? Sure, he looked my age, and it would stand to reason that man with that face and that bod and that deep chuckle at his age would have a woman in his bed. Still, I watched him disappear around the chill case filled with a Dwala.
Sniff can go get your nail polish. I'm staying with you.
Rome decreed. I turned to him.
What? That guy's gonna pounce, he told me. He's got flowers in his cart, I told him. He's gonna pounce, he repeated.
He's got flowers, boy. Means he's got a woman, I returned.
He's gonna pounce.
I shut up. Rome did not like repeating himself. I hadn't had them long. Both boys had been 15 when I took them on. Now they were both 18 and nearing on graduating high school. But even back then, after all he'd been through, all he'd seen, all that had been done to him, all he'd lost, Rome had honed that edge of steel that made him, and it was the kind you never lost. It didn't matter what love you found in your life, and Jules had led both those boys to a lot of love. Case in point, me. That kind of steel never went away. Steel like that replaced the marrow in your bones. It was just what happened. When he and his bud, Park, had taken Sniff under their wing, they'd protected Sniff from a lot of what they'd endured. And when both he and Sniff had lost Park to bad dope, Rome hadn't been able to protect Sniff from it, or protect Jules. And it was my feeling that loss, and also the fact he hadn't been able to prevent it, had changed him irrevocably. He did not waste time. He did not suffer fools gladly. And he did not let anyone harm someone he loved. He'd taken a bullet to prove that to Jules. There were grown men who didn't have it in them to make that kind of sacrifice. Rome had done it at the age of 15. "Got no need for a man in my life, baby," I said softly. "Got the only two men I need right now, and I'm seeing to them, and only them, until they start seeing to themselves. So don't you worry, Rome. You can go to Walgreens with Sniff, and I'll make sure I got enough double stuffs to last you the week. Now you get my varnish, and don't forget the lip gloss. Smoldering Eclipse." Rome kept scowling, and this had nothing to do with him imminently having to find lip gloss in the shade of Smoldering Eclipse. Sniff huffed out a sigh. I endured this until eventually Sniff tagged Rome's arm and muttered, "Let's go. She won't back down, you know it. Faster we get her girly crap, faster we can get back." "Need us, you call," Rome ordered. I did not inform him I was a 53-year-old woman and could take care of myself. I just rolled my eyes. They took off. I watched them go, thinking there was more to what I said to Rome, and it wasn't the fact that man with his flowers clearly had a woman in his life. It was that I was not going to take on another man for the rest of mine. I'd had one, and he'd changed me irrevocably, and not a bit of it was in a good way. He hadn't left steel in the marrow of my bones. He'd left dust. After he was whacked, I'd gone on to make stupid decisions that affected not only me. I had a history, an ugly one, that no man would want to take on. And I couldn't imagine anything on this earth worse, for me, than maybe getting the attention of a beautiful man who chuckled like humor bubbled up from his soul, and having to watch his face as he learned who I was and what I'd done. Before hitting the doors, Rome stopped, turned, and stared at me. And years of life on the streets, before I got him under my roof, meant I'd have to be more badass than Lee Nightingale himself to hide anything from that boy. But it wasn't about being badass. It was that I didn't hide shit from my boys. They'd led lives given no reason to trust, and it had been hell teaching them that they could trust me, and taking that further and showing them how to find others with whom they could do the same. I didn't blow him a kiss, send him a smile, or give him a nod. You didn't do that with Rome. He wasn't about displays of affection. You earned his by being real and being solid. So I just held his gaze and looked impatient. He turned and followed his brother out the door. I swung my cart around and braced at the thought of facing Rose Hottie in the fruit and veg section. He probably had a sister at home that rivaled Naomi or Hallie or Taraji or Angela or Tyra. He was nowhere to be seen. "Lord, have mercy on me," I whispered to myself as I perused apples, oranges, bananas, kiwis, spinach, cucumbers, broccoli, and carrots, throwing it all in my cart, even knowing I'd eat that shit myself, as the boys dipped their Oreos in full fat milk and decimated party-sized bags of ranch-flavored Doritos, which was what I was reaching for, times three, several aisles later, when I heard, "Hello?" I turned my head and looked into dark brown eyes, separated by an interestingly creased bridge of a nose and a handsome face. Then I did something so anti-Shirlene Jackson, it was like I'd immediately formed a split personality. I bolted. Shit, Rome was right. No man called attention to himself by greeting some woman reaching for Doritos, unless he wanted to pounce. God damn. I was halfway through the next aisle when I realized I hadn't nabbed the cheddar cheese ruffles for Rome or the Pringles smorgasbord for both of them. So I motored down the aisle, swung wide to the next one, motored down that one, caught Rose Hottie studying the water selection, which, with those shoulders he probably drank while lifting weights, in the aisle that stood between me and the boy's Pringles. I boogied as fast as my Louboutin Constantina pom-pom flats would take me, which was fast, and that was good since I had to go fast, but it was bad since I wished being in that man's presence I'd been wearing a pair of heels. Specifically, my new Alexander Wang Black Rena beaded slingbacks, though I wasn't sure they went with my LV. Still, they were hot. I circled back into the snack aisle and got the Pringles, Ruffles, and Chex Mix on the trot, making sure to nab the cheesy crackers both boys loved, times four. Rose Hottie was out of the water and soda aisle, thankfully, as I had stocking up to do there. But as I hit the cleaning supplies section, he was perusing fabric softener. I also needed fabric softener. His head came around, so I did a U-ey with my cart and high-tailed my ass out of there, liberally, as usual, stocking up on paper towels. Sorry, environment, but I had two teenage boys. They didn't understand global warming or the concept of reusable rags, no matter how much I drilled that shit in their heads. And Charmin. I circled back when the coast was clear for fabric softener. It happened in the three-aisle freezer section. I had to get tater tots and crinkle cuts, not to mention a hefty supply of DiGiorno's. Rome might starve to death if he couldn't bake a frozen pizza when I was out, and I was a rock chick, so I was out a lot. I also had two teenage boys who obsessively maintained social lives and their badass training, so they weren't home all that much. But when they got home, they were hungry. The entire freezer in the garage was taken up with DiGiorno's, and we were running low. But Rose Hottie was now on a mission. His fine black ass, and yes, I caught a glimpse, and yes, it almost sent me into vapors, had speeded up, and every time he saw me, him and his cart made a beeline to me. I lost him when I was doing my usual Hail Mary with the frozen peas. I'd eat all those too. And as I trucked out of the frozen food section and loaded up with milk and creamer, as well as hit the cheese aisle, he was gone. Bad. Good. Bad. No, good. But it felt bad. Since it felt bad, it was not the boys, but me who scored an entire birthday cake. But in the end, the boys would eat most of it. And I thought of my girl Daisy and her lover man Marcus. I also thought of Indy and how deeply she was adored by Lee, and Jet, who was practically worshipped by Eddie. And then there was Roxy, who was beloved to Hank. Jules and Vance, Ava and Luke, Stella and Mace, Sadie and Hector, Allie and Ren, Todd and Stevie, Ralphie and Buddy, Tex and Nancy. I was staring at the bagels and fresh rolls in the bakery section, close to tears. Me, Shirlene Jackson, widow of the low-down, good-for-nothing Leon Jackson, ex-drug dealer. I was tough. I'd lived through hell. And there I was, near tears in the bakery section of King Supers. Because I wanted a badass. I wanted to be adored, beloved, worshipped by a good man who saw nothing but good in me. I'd wanted that for as long as I could remember. And it wasn't going to happen. Not for me. Never for me. Because life was unfair. But the worst of it was, I'd made it that way. Crash! I jumped back as my cart slammed into the bagel display.
Toilet paper packs and Bounty wobbling, full fat milk guggling, chips rustling, boxes of DiGiorno nearly toppling, cart ending up jammed against the shelves under the bagels, caged there by another cart that was nearly as full as mine. I turned my head to see Rose Hottie, hands still on the cart that had plowed into my own. Now that I have your attention. Ooh-wee. His voice was honey. Warm, sweet, deep, delicious honey. Hell's fire. I forced out. A Moses, he declared. Oh, Lord. Good name. Great name. Goddamn. I mumbled. Moses Richardson.
I got kinda lost in watching his lips moving.
They moved again. Now's the time you tell me your name, he ordered. My eyes lifted to his. Bad idea. He had fabulous eyes, open, amused, and curious. I'm grocery shopping, I shared. His eyes turned more amused. Is that your name? He asked. No. I hadn't really missed that, he told me, tipping his head to my cart. I decided not to say anything more. He didn't take the hint and unjack my cart from the bakery display. He gave my cart a thorough examination before looking again at me and inquiring, "Those your boys?" What? At the entrance. Those boys you were with. 10 frozen pizzas in your cart. They yours? Yep. Expressive eyebrows went up. Both of them? He pushed. Yep, I pushed out. You got a brother? He asked. As in the sibling kind? I asked back. No, he answered. No, I answered. Hard to make that white one with a brother, he decreed. Yeah, I agreed. Adopted? He kept at me. Foster, I shared. That's when it happened. We were in the bakery section, and it felt like the ovens had all been dialed up, doors open, warming the place with bakery oven goodness. You're Foster Mama, he queried softly. Just them. How long they been with you? 3 years. So they're yours, he pressed. My chin lifted half an inch. They're mine. More warmth, not from the ovens, coming direct from him. Moses Richardson. Damn.
What's your name? He asked.
It was time to pull my shit together. I tried to unwedge my cart, muttering, I gotta go. He shoved my cart in farther, damaging the bagged cardboard trays of Hawaiian rolls on the shelves under the bagels. I looked back to him.
They'll like me, he announced.
I stared. Was this brother seriously jumping that far ahead?
Because I like you, he explained.
You don't know me, I pointed out.
Yeah, I do.
That felt nice. I still shook my head, for his sake, and mine. You don't, and you won't.
I do, and I will.
It was time to snap back to Charlene. Listen, my man, you need to move your cart. I got shit to do. My boys'll be back soon, and Rome's got a girl coming over tonight, and we gotta get him set up before Sniff and I hit Jerusalem.
He looked impressed. Combo platter.
You were either vegetarian or not from Denver if you didn't get the combo or meat platter at Jerusalem. Absolutely. More warmth, and then Rome. The black one.
I mean the name, he clarified.
Street name. Same with Sniff. Another brow lift.
You let them go by their street names.
There were battles to wage when they hit my crib. That wasn't one of them.
I can imagine, he murmured.
I took him in. Dark wash jeans, pressed button down, discreet but attractive. Curb-chained gold bracelet peeking from his cuff.
Good boots. He had no fucking clue. No, you can't, I snapped. His eyes stared right into mine.
Work at Gilliam, corrections officer. I can.
Gilliam. Gilliam Youth Services Center. Denver Juvie.
Well, shit. 3 years, those boys. You took them in at what, 16? 17? There are about -200 good foster mamas in Denver who take in boys that age, that size, with street names and 100 years they never should have lived on their faces. But then there was you, he decreed.
I started to feel goosebumps forming all over my skin. They were 15, I said quietly.
Same shit, different age, he replied.
He was so right about that. Listen, Moses,
I want to take you to dinner.
I snapped my mouth shut.
You're the most beautiful sister I've seen in 10 years, and I thought that before I knew what you were to those boys, he went on.
Oh, Lord, that felt nice.
I don't say no,
he whispered. I swallowed.
I got 2 teenage daughters, which might not be good with those 2 boys, but we'll tackle that when we face it, he kept at me. And I got an ex-wife, who didn't make it easy in the beginning, but we got a flow now, and we've been riding that for 7 years, divorced for 11, so we got it down, and she's not a problem. You're not wearing a ring. You got an ex?
My man's dead.
I'm sorry, he said gently.
I'm not, I returned. At that, he studied me. And as it seemed was his way, he threw it right out there.
Didn't do you right?
He asked. We're not talking about this, I told him. He gave one nod of that perfectly formed skull.
Right. Good call. We'll talk about it over dinner.
I had to escape this, now, for him, and me.
Listen, Moses. Please, God, woman, don't say no.
I shut my mouth again. I opened it to warn. Trust me, you do not want to take this on. He shook his head at that.
I do.
You really don't?
I absolutely do.
It was then I looked right into his eyes. You absolutely do not. He was not deterred.
Damn it. How about you let me decide that?
How about you move your cart so I can keep on keeping on? His head tipped to the side.
You're not into me?
Was he seriously living in that body, having that face, that voice, those crinkles on his nose, and that manner, and asking that shit? I decided a question that stupid wasn't worthy of an answer. Amusement lit his eyes again.
You're into me.
I got a job herding badasses, and I got 2 badasses hoovering through Oreos and Doritos at my house. I don't need another badass on my hands. He bent into his forearms on the bar of his cart, making his shoulders ripple under his shirt that tightened on them, which made something ripple in one specific part of me. Him doing this like we were going to crack open a bottle of wine and stay a while in the bakery section, as he asked.
What's your job that you herd badasses?
I started jimmying my cart to try to disengage it, muttering, We're not doing this.
Stop,
he demanded. I looked at him again. Move, I demanded. He did. He moved from the handle of his cart toward me, one arm behind his back. I froze. He pulled out his wallet.
Got a pen?
He asked. I mumbled because he was close, and he smelled good. Like, real good. He stopped even closer, so close I had to tip my head to look into those brown eyes.
Baby, I asked, you got a pen in that classy bag of yours, he murmured.
After Leon got whacked, I decided in my life I was not ever doing anything I didn't want to do. And one could not say that I didn't want to look down to my bag, open it, pull out a pen, and hand it to Moses Richardson. What one could say, that one being me, was that I had no control over my actions. Him that close, looking that good, smelling that amazing. If he asked me if I had a honey-baked ham in my bag, I would have rushed to the deli, grabbed one, sprinted back, shoved it in my LV, no matter that broke all the laws of my universe, so I could pull it out and hand it to him. In other words, I gave him my pen. He wrote on a white card on the back of his wallet, then he returned his wallet to his jeans, offering the pen and card to me. My card. My cell number on the back. And your call. You think on it. You want dinner, you call me. Then you buy a nice dress. Because no way when you call me I'm not doing it upright. Slowly, my hand lifted and took the card and pen. He didn't let it go. At first. What's your name? He whispered. Charlene. I whispered back, staring in those eyes. Those eyes warmed and that warmth warmed me. Straight to my bones, where I'd been cold a really, really long time. It was nice to meet you, Charlene, he said softly. He let go of the card, only to stroll the 3 feet in order to drop his hand to the roses that I now saw had a receipt stapled to the paper, so I could walk right out with them. He came back and rested them on my LV in the child seat. After he pulled that class move, I watched him go back to the handle of his cart. He pulled his cart from mine, and looking over his shoulder to shoot me a white smile, he walked away. Chapter 2. So far away.
Jesus, what's all this shit?
I saw a strong, long-fingered, veined hand reach toward my pack of sorbet wet erase markers and did the only thing I could do. I reached out, slapped it sharply, and shot from my chair to my feet behind my desk in the reception area of Nightingale Investigations to face off against Luke Stark. I also snapped, "Don't touch anything. I'm getting organized." Luke stood across the desk from me wearing a black t-shirt, blue jeans, and a shocked expression on his badass face. He'd recently given up on his legendary Fu Manchu mustache and had grown in a full black beard. I missed the Fu Manchu. There was exactly one man on the planet who could pull it off, Luke. But he could pull it off. Saying that, the man was fine, so the beard far from sucked.
"You getting what?"
he asked.
"Organized," I clipped. "What?"
he repeated.
"Organized," I bit out impatiently. "I mean, sheesh."
I was the office manager at the private investigations firm where he worked. Granted, I didn't file, and I generally didn't organize. I mostly helped Lee dodge anything that might chain him to his desk, like putting off appointments or taking them in his stead. Or paying bills, or sending invoices, or cutting paychecks. But, except for the last, which was mostly automated, I did it all when the spirit moved me. For instance, when my nails didn't need a new coat, or when the latest Us Weekly hadn't been released. Lee was cool I rolled that way. Still, everyone could be better organized, including me. And no, I was not using purchasing hundreds of dollars of planner shit as a way to escape the fact that it had been a week since I'd met Moses Richardson at King Super's. And I could not call him no matter how weak I wanted to be, and in that weakness call him immediately. And no, I would not be using organizing the shit out of my life and every life that touched my life, including every member of the Hot Bunch, as a way to continue to escape that. Even though I was oh so totally doing that. Bottom line, Luke should be happy, not giving me shit. He looked down at the healthy, okay, ridiculously out of hand, display of planner and planner accoutrement littering the entirety of the top of my large desk, and then looked back at me.
"With purple markers, stickers, and post-its with flowers on them?"
he queried.
"I'm creating a system.
I shared as the front door opened. I didn't look to it when Luke asked, "A system that includes purple markers and stickers?" What was he not understanding about this? Yes, it's all about color coordination, creativity, and visual stimulation.
Jesus, what's all this shit?
Vance Crowe asked, eyes down to my desk, body coming to stand on one side of Luke. Hector Chavez appeared on Luke's other side.
Fuck,
Hector muttered, also staring at the desk. Most women, facing off with that kind of eye candy in close proximity, would pass out. Yes, these men were that hot. Seriously. No female brain could stay conscious with Luke Stark, Vance Crowe, and Hector Chavez 2 feet away from them. Fortunately, I'd grown immune to it. That was a lie, but I'd become accustomed to it. Vance, quicker on the move than his bros, probably due to his history as an ex-con, reached out and nabbed my pack of gem tone markers. He then waved them in the air.
I'm pretty sure Lee wrote in the employee handbook there are no pink markers allowed on the premises.
That's not pink, I shared. It's fuchsia. I reached out to the sorbet pack and tapped it with my nail, coated in clothing optional, of course. This one has the pink. Seeing as Vance was taking my attention, I didn't clock Hector picking up a sheet of stickers.
You got something wrong with your hand?
He asked.
No,
I answered.
Then why you got stickers that say trash day, treat yourself, laundry time, and butt first coffee, when you can write that shit out yourself?
Because they have a cute font and cute little pictures, I told him as the door to the inner sanctum opened. And they're stickers. Everyone likes stickers.
Little kids like stickers,
Vance pointed out. He'd know. He was in the process of making an army of them with jewels.
I'm becoming one with my inner child, I informed him snottily.
So you're organizing your life. You're not using stickers and purple markers to organize the men,
Luke declared. Like he'd just about allow this, but only under some duress.
I'm organizing all of you all's asses too,
I shared and finished, with purple markers. Though you're purple, as in grape sorbet, I told Luke. Vance is teal, and Hector is amethyst.
Shit,
Hector muttered.
Holy fuck,
Mace muttered, rounding the end of my desk with Lee, eyes aimed down and stopping there. When Lee came to a halt with Mace, his brows hiked high.
What's all this shit?
Thank God I could no longer carry a switchblade.
I'm organizing, I nearly shouted.
Lee reached out and tagged the pack of handy, glittery, metallic elastic bands I bought to keep my planner closed, say, when I threw it in my purse or in my car.
Did you buy this shit on the business account?
He asked.
Some of it, I answered.
Lee's brows sunk low, and most people, men or women, would lose control of their bladder at that look. I was accustomed to it.
You bought stickers with mushrooms on them on the NI dime?
Mace asked, waving my autumn stickers. Those are for around Thanksgiving time, I shared as the door to the inner sanctum opened again.
And this is?
Hector asked. And I looked to him to see him brandishing a laminated picture that had a pink peppermint house with a snowflake on the door, and a curly-cue pine tree next to it fashioned in white and glitter, and swirls and snowflakes in the air all around against a blue background with my name in pink on it.
That's my Christmas cover, I explained. I have one for Thanksgiving, Easter, the 4th of July, and one for when I'm wearing blacks and silvers instead of browns and golds.
You change the cover of your planner with the outfit?
Vance asked.
And the season, I answered.
That go in the business account too?
Lee asked. I swung to him.
Hell no.
Though the Thanksgiving, Easter, 4th of July, and etc. stickers went on it because they had ones that said to do.
Oh my God, dope! You got planner stickers!
Brody, the Nightingale Investigations computer guru, meaning nerd, alternately meaning hacker, but mostly it was nerd, shrieked. See? Nerd.
He dashed around the desk to stand by me, his hand snaking out to grab the entire sheet that had stickers that said "Jammin'" on my planner. He looked at me with bright shining in his eyes that was undimmed through his Buddy Holly glasses.
"Can I have a sheet of these?"
Since those were on the NI dime, too, I stated magnanimously, "Knock yourself out."
"Whoa!"
Brody yelled, looking back down to my desk. "Where do you get these ones that say don't be a dick and fuck this? I gotta get some of those." I decided not to meet any eyes as I replied, "Take one. I bought 5.
"Yeah!"
he cried, snatching it up.
"Who's Moses Richardson?"
My heart clean stopped in my chest, but my eyes moved to Hector. They did this slowly, but they moved. He was holding Moses' business card. Stupid me. I'd upended most of my purse on the desk in my quest to get organized. And since I was carrying around Moses' card like a personal talisman, it had fallen out. Then again, none of the men had ever shown the least interest in what was on my desk. And then again to that, it was rare anything was on my desk but a bottle of nail varnish and or acetone. Hector's attention was on the card.
"Director of Juvenile Probation?"
He looked at me. "You got a problem with the boys?"
"No,"
I pushed out.
"There's a number on the back,"
Brody informed Hector helpfully. Hector flipped the card. Luke turned his head to look at it. Vance leaned in to look across Luke at it. Mace was also looking at it, even if from his position he couldn't see it. Though he had badass vision, so maybe he could see it, what did I know? I was a little badass, but not like them. Lee was watching me.
"Can you all move along?" I asked, as a demand. "I've got a plan to organize your mission for tonight with peach sorbet being tactical and lime sorbet being surveillance."
Luke looked to me.
"You seeing a juvie officer, Shirlane?"
Most of the time, considering some of the stuff they did was vaguely illegal and not so vaguely unsafe, I thought it was great they were all highly intelligent and uncannily perceptive. This was not one of those times.
"We met, he asked me out, I said no, he gave me his card, should I rethink? The end," I told him.
Luke looked to Lee. Mace looked to Vance. Hector looked back down at the card. Brody looked at me.
"Why'd you say no?" "Have I ever struck you as a woman who shares her personal life?" I asked. "I was over at your house watching Tarzan 2 weeks ago, and you pulled out your family albums,"
Brody reminded me.
"All 12 of them."
"Damn."
"I was drunk," I lied.
"You were not."
He called me on it. "Alexander Skarsgård got me to feeling sentimental," I snapped.
"That, from you, I can believe," Vance muttered.
I swept a hand above my desk.
"Does it look like I don't have things to do? Once I color-code your mission tonight, I have a year's worth of holiday stickers to stick into my planner, and that shit includes Flag Day and Cyber Monday and Palm Sunday, so it's gonna be intense. In other words, I got shit to do."
"Why'd you say no?" Lee asked. Oh, no. This question did not bode well, and the intent way he was examining my face boded even worse. "This really isn't your business," I replied quietly. Lee held my eyes, but he'd broken the seal.
"You're not into him?" Luke asked.
I turned my attention to Luke.
"I already got a full life. Don't need anything making it fuller."
"You're into him," Luke whispered.
"Shit. There's full, Shirlane, then there's full," Vance noted.
"Are we really standing around my desk talking about my love life?" I demanded.
"No,"
Lee stated shortly.
"We're standing around it talking about the fact that you don't have one."
"And how's that your business?" I queried sharply. Every single man, including Nerdy Brody, leaned back from my desk in badass affront, the badass part not including Brody. Okay, I had to give them that since I meddled in almost all of theirs, save Brody, who didn't have one yet. And Lee, considering I wasn't around when he and Indy hooked up. Okay, all of theirs.
"This isn't the same," I stated.
"Yeah, you're right,"
This isn't the same as you helping Ava get dressed up to go out on a date with another guy when she was sleeping in my bed, Luke rumbled. Oh, Lordy.
That wasn't a date, I reminded him. It was a thank you dinner. And anyway, Ava was the first rock chick I was in charge of. I didn't have a lot of experience.
This was now years ago. The woman was wearing his ring, and he still did not look happy this event occurred.
Damn, I told that girl it was a bad idea.
Did she listen to me?
No.
She went on a thank you dinner that seemed a lot like a date with a hot guy the man whose bed she was sleeping in didn't like all that much, primarily because he'd asked the woman who was sleeping in his bed out to a thank you dinner that was really a date. And now she was still sleeping in Luke's bed, doing it with a ring on it, and was she paying for that shit she pulled?
No. She was getting the business. Regular. While I'd named my vibrator Eustace, because he knew me better than any man on Earth. And I was getting Ava's man all up in my business.
And that guy she went out on a date with is who my sister is now living with, Lee put in.
I shut up. You went with Sadie when she reported her rape.
After Hector spoke, I pulled my lips in and looked at him.
You're a member of this family, Shirlene, he said quietly. Once you're in, there's no way out. What I'm thinking you might not get what this is.
He flapped Moses' card in front of himself.
That's a good thing.
He crashed his cart into mine at King Super's, I blurted. Me, Shirlene Jackson, blurting, to badasses.
Deliberately? Mace growled.
Oh, boy. Short fuse Mace. He was getting a regular too from his woman Stella, so his fuse should be less short. But he, like all the hot bunch boys, was of the Rome variety. You didn't fuck with someone he loved.
I'd been kinda, running away from him all through the frozen food section, I explained.
Vance's head dropped and turned to the side. I still saw his shit-eating grin, and his body shaking with silent laughter. What I said didn't make Mace much happier.
So, you clearly didn't want his attention. He should've took the hint and backed the fuck off.
All of the men dropped their heads and looked to the side at that.
Yeah, and how'd that work for you when you so delicately pursued Stella after she told you repeatedly you guys were over? I asked.
Mace's jaw went hard. I said on a head snap. Lee came back to the conversation before I could carry on about how he'd not backed off from Indy when she tried to make him do so, and Vance had not done that with Jules, or Luke from Ava, and so on.
So, you're into him, and he's chasing you through the frozen food section. Why'd you say no?
He's attractive, but not my type.
What's your type? Vance asked curiously.
Not him. Brody piped up.
Alexander Skarsgård, Gerard Butler, Dwayne Johnson, Idris Elba.
His mouth was still open when I turned and ordered, "Shut up, Brody." His mouth closed. I was glaring at him and mentally deciding no more Brody Shirlene movie nights. At least for a month. What can I say? Brody and I had similar cinematic leanings when Luke declared, "We're on mission in an hour."
Yeah, and it's not color-coded yet, I put in.
Luke gave me a blank look. Vance shook his head. The rest of the men started to move away.
My card,
I snapped at Hector, who still had Moses' card. Hector turned back, mouth open. Vance's mouth opened. Mace's mouth opened. I didn't look, but I was sure Brody's mouth opened. Luke's mouth thinned, but it was Lee who spoke.
Give her back the card, Hector.
Hector set it on my desk, his liquid black gaze to me before it shifted to Lee. I didn't touch it or say another word as all the men moved through the door to the inner sanctum. Only then did I snatch it up and clip it with one of my 4 new magnetic paper clips to the week of Christmas, which was 9 months away, because I had a feeling Moses Richardson was like Christmas when it was April. Joy and goodness and dreams coming true, but still so far away.
Lee Nightingale. 24 hours later. Lee walked into the control room, asking, "What we got?" Luke shifted away from the desk Hector and Mace were also standing at to expose Vance in a chair, rolling over from the other desk in the room to the one Monty was sitting behind with his laptop in front of him. Monty looked up from the laptop and didn't fuck around with laying it out.
"Moses James Richardson, 51 years of age, Army, honorable discharge, distinguished service cross recipient."
His eyes locked on Lee's.
"Kuwait, Sierra Leone, Bosnia, Kuwait, Somalia, Bosnia."
"Holy fuck," Lee whispered.
"His boots got dusty,"
Monty replied.
"Shit, yeah,"
Lee replied, impressed. That kind of resume meant his unit was elite. Monty looked back to the laptop.
"Married 7 years, divorce acrimonious, but since then they've straightened shit out, and his ex is remarried. 2 daughters, 1 17, 1 15, both on a roll. Oldest drill team, youngest sophomore class president."
"How do you get into juvie work?" Lee asked.
"Far as I can see from his interview notes, he had a cousin. His uncle was a good man. Kid just had a tendency to go off the rails. Kid was younger than him, but Richardson took him under his wing. They were tight. Helped keep him on the straight and narrow as best he could. While Richardson was occupied with earning his Distinguished Service Cross, the cousin got into some trouble that brought him being tried as an adult at 17 and hitting the big house for a dime. After Richardson got out of the Army, used the GI Bill to get his degree, went into the academy, became a beat cop, made detective, but eventually he moved over. Did his time as a juvenile corrections officer. Now he oversees that outfit. What we got? He's still very hands-on with the kids. In a way, it's not a job, it's a mission."
Monty turned the laptop around, and on it was the photo panel of a Facebook page album entitled "Me and My Dad." His youngest daughter was pretty. Her dad was built, and the man was good-looking.
"So, no red flags,"
Lee noted, starting to look at Monty, but Luke grunting switched his attention. It was Monty who spoke.
"He undoubtedly knew Park, and probably knew Rome, which means he might know Charlene."
Lee felt his neck get tight.
"Say again?" "Both Park and Rome went through Gilliam, Lee," Monty shared. "Richardson was there when they were there. Park was there more often than Rome. Rome only hit juvie once. Park was there repeatedly."
"So how's he gonna know Charlene?" Lee asked.
"It wasn't exactly off radar how Jules and King's shelter finagled that placement. 2 teenage street kids placed in foster care with an ex-drug dealer who had not gone through the program. This, right after a social worker was shot twice trying to protect one of those kids. It caused some ripples. It isn't a stretch, this guy, working in the system as long as he has, for the reasons he quit being a cop and became a JCO, heard that word."
"You think he has some problem with her?" Lee pushed.
"I think if there's anyone who knows the difference between people who fuck up their lives with no intention to change them, and people who made stupid decisions in their lives and worked their asses off and or put them on the line to get their shit sorted or get it clean, and admires it, it's this guy,"
Monty answered.
"But we can't know that," Luke growled.
Monty shook his head, but did it in agreement.
"We can't know that." "So before we go all matchmaker, we fill this guy out," Luke declared.
Lee turned to Luke.
"Absolutely. I want on him for a day or two,"
Vance, their best tracker, said,
"and I want in his house."
None of them were slouches on that front, but Vance was also best with the B&D.
"Do it," Lee obliged. "You do the house, I'll do the follow,"
Mace said.
"We gotta pass off on the follow, seeing as we're all famous now. This guy, he might tag a tail,"
Hector reminded them.
"So we gotta pass off, especially if he tags one of us. You get made, you share. Means we all gotta back off," Lee ordered. "Thanks to those fucking newspaper articles and books,
One and one will make two. He sees more than one hot bunch guy. There were a variety of lip curls to share how they all felt about that, none of them amused in the least. Hector nodded. Lee looked to Monty. He'd cheat on his wife? She'd cheat on him? What went down?
Court records state irreconcilable differences. No claims of infidelity recorded. He fought for more visitation with his girls. She fought against it. I can't know why she did that, but he got it, and both girls